My name's Jim and I am an addict.
Hey, Jim.
This never bothers me until like 5 minutes before. And then we were talking about this before the meeting started about this being the most feared thing amongst human beings is speaking in front of a group of people, and it's even more intimidating when it's a group of people that you're intimate with, people that you know. And so it'll wear off in a minute. My heart's like beating out of my chest. So, like all the stuff in Narcotics Anonymous, when I got here, I didn't know anything about living life without the use of drugs. Everything that I apply in my life today, I was taught by another recovering addict, either through the literature or through watching somebody else apply it in their life and apply it in my life. I didn't come up with any of the stuff that keeps me clean today on my own. I didn't just magically invent any of this shit on my own. It's been taught to me. I came in my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous outside of a treatment center terrified. Just terrified. Completely desperate. I had tried the geographical cure many, many times in my life. I've been back and forth across the U.S., up and down the West Coast, and a couple places up in up on the East Coast, and I've got a real strong self-will. You know, I've always been able to relocate and stop using and try to like force abstinence in my life, and that never worked because really nothing ever changed. All I did was stop using, and recovery is more than that. Recovery is abstinence plus change, and the equation to that is growth. And I like to keep this desperation that brought me here really close to my spirit. I'm only like one bad decision away from where I was when I got here. All the days that I've been here applying this stuff, practicing this stuff, doesn't guarantee me any. I'm only one reach away. I can go out on the street without knowing anybody in this town and get high. And it's kind of terrifying. And I was shown how to do this up here, speak up here. They told me to share my experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, how I got here, and what my recovery process is like today. And my journey through step work has showed me that even before using, I had a lot of addictive behaviors. And I look back and some of the stuff that really gave me this euphoric feeling was stealing. And I was doing that stuff long before I started putting a drug in me. This journey started for me real young. I think the first thing I ever consciously used was manipulation. I learned to manipulate my mother very young. I had two older brothers, and they were always putting me up to shit. Because I was the baby, and they knew I could get away with anything. They were like, go do this. And I always got away with crazy shit. I should write a book about the stuff that I asked my mother if I could do, and she said okay. She'd probably kick my ass, but I think it'd be eye-opening for both of us. So this thing started for me real, real young. The first drug I put in me was the last drug I put down was nicotine. I started smoking cigarettes in fourth grade. April 18th, 2008 was the last time I had a cigarette. Just celebrated 11 years without smoking a cigarette. That's mind-boggling. Just mind-boggling. Because I was all in, man. When I smoked cigarettes, I smoked cigars, and I chewed snuff every day. I had a $400 tobacco habit a month in 2008. So it's probably triple that now. Started smoking pot every day in fifth grade. If you have young kids, look at your fifth grader and imagine them smoking pot every day. And we drank, I was already into snorting Black Beauties at that age, fifth grade. That's pretty mind-boggling. I think about it, no wonder I'm so fucking stupid most of the time. So our literature talks about our spiritual growth being stunted, and so my spiritual growth was severely stunted at that point in time in my life. And that's when I quit paying attention to school. So when I got here, I basically had a fifth grade education when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I have a little bit more education now than that. And so, you know, as a result of starting at a young age, man, my disease really took hold. And I don't know when it talks about it in our literature. I don't know when that switch was flipped and it took over me. It might have been from that very first time I put that cigarette in me. But I know that something that I remember the first time I smoked a cigarette, it made me sick. But I remember the reaction that I got from my brothers. And that's what kept me going back in the beginning. It wasn't the way it made me feel, because it made me sick. Like, puking, sick. But I went back because I wanted that people-pleasing it talks about. I wanted that acceptance from my older brothers. And I always wanted to be like them. And so I chased that. And it took me down some roads, let me tell you. I did a lot of stuff chasing the acceptance of another human being. Just finished another sixth step, which is, revealing when it comes to that stuff. But the first time I used an IV drug was right around my 15th birthday. And I thought, like, I found that, like, a spiritual connection that I had always been seeking my whole life. And I didn't take a breath for, like, 6 years. You know, every day. That was my mission. Every single day. And right around 21 or so, I had a moment of clarity and got some abstinence. And I've had some small periods of abstinence throughout my life. And then I would find myself right back in the same spot, doing the same things, the same kind of people, getting the same kind of results. And I couldn't understand how I was ending up here. And I would ask myself, how am I here again? And I couldn't understand, because I didn't know how to, like, apply a spiritual principle in the place of, like, a defective character. And I had this moment of clarity. I was standing in a hospital room waiting for my dad after a serious medical event in his life in Phoenix, Arizona, and that's where I grew up. And I had this, like, spiritual awakening for the first time in my life, and I wasn't clean yet then. And that's like where my journey started for me. I was standing in this hospital room with a couple family members and a couple military dignitaries. And I was 118-pound, soaking wet, terrorist, junkie. And I don't know if you've ever been around, like, dignitaries, but they're a little bit intimidating, you know? And I'm all tweaked out and geeked out. And I'm in this hospital room, and for the first time in my life, I realize that, like, I'm at the epicenter of all this chaos in my life. And I stopped pointing the finger of blame. The first time in my life, I took a real honest look and accepted the fact that, like, all the problems in my life start with me. And since that day, I, like, stopped pointing my finger at the world around me, my teachers, my parents for getting divorced. I had a million excuses why it wasn't my fault. A million. And I stopped doing that in that moment. And from that time, I started to reach out for help in a different way. I never had a problem with asking for something. I don't know how you got high, but I had to ask a lot. Because I was getting high a lot. And so, like, I started to receive what was being offered to me in a different way. At the end of my road, I was doing opiates. Because that's what's around here. Opiates. I'm a tweaker, man. I like to do meth and stay up for a year. Like, that's what my DNA. Okay, if you see me on the streets, that's where I'm going. Alright? Fucking eyes this big, skinny as a rail. And so at the end of my road, like, I'm desperate because I don't want to be doing opiates. And my disease is telling me, guess what, jackass, you're doing opiates today. And so... when I got back from Phoenix back home here, I started to, like, ask for help in a different way, with my spirit instead of with my hand. And it took me 10.5 weeks to get into treatment. And I would go 3 days without using, crawling around on my floor of my apartment, shitting and puking in and out of the shower every 20 minutes, like crawling back up on my couch and crawling back to the shower like all day for like 3 days in a row, and then I would give in. And I did that for 10.5 weeks. I have chills all over me. I want to cry. And kind of want to puke a little. And you know, they found some funding for me, and they sent me off to treatment. And detox sucked, man. I don't know how any of you guys go back and back and back. I want no part of detox ever again. I got out of there, and this guy, I've always done H&I ever since the moment I could in Narcotics Anonymous. Is what I'm passionate about the most. This guy brought this meeting into the detox, and there's a page in the very beginning of the basic text that talks about the stuff we do to get and use and find the ways and means to get more. And he shared about that, and it was the first time in my life I ever identified spiritually with a grown man. First time I ever had like a spiritual connection to him. I was 31 years old. Never had like a heartfelt like spiritual connection to another grown man, which is kind of sad. And I knew in that moment, like, there was, whatever it was, there was something that was here that touched my spirit. And I haven't let go of that. They told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days in that treatment center. I went AMA. The place creeped me out. Honestly, I came home and I went to a meeting. Hugs Instead of Drugs was my first meeting I ever went to. It's the first time in my life I ever felt like I was where I was supposed to be, and I felt like I was okay to be there. I never felt comfortable in my family home or church or school, on the playground. I never even felt at home in the dope man's house. And I walked in that meeting and some guys gave me a hug and said, "Welcome home." Nobody told me to sit down and shut the fuck up. They probably should have. They do now. And thank you for that. Because I need it. And I'm passionate about my home group. I don't, like, the guys that know me know, I don't screw around with my home group. The meeting starts at 7, I'm there at 5:45. Because I love my home group, man. I want that newcomer to show up in my home group and have coffee, man. And like, everybody just getting clean, just chain smoking, drinking coffee. Like, I want you to have some coffee if you show up to my home group, and the literature be ready. And like, you know, we're already ready for you when you come. We're not scrambling around. That, you know, because they did that for me when I got here. I'm grateful for these guys that were here. When I got here, they were serious about Narcotics Anonymous. He didn't sugarcoat this thing for me. Our traditions aren't negotiable. We don't sit around and debate it like some other whatever. I don't know what anybody else is doing. But we don't do that here, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful for these guys, like, giving it to me the way I needed to hear it. You know, I'd rather you, like, tell me something I need to hear, hurt my feelings, than spare my feelings, and then, you know, and then I'm out the door. I don't know. I love my home group. It's the one place I know I'm going to be every week. Every week I know there's. I've done a lot of things. I got clean 3/8/05. So, you know, March 8, 2005 is my clean date. And since then, like, I've been on a Wednesday at 5:45. You know where to find me. That's where I'm at. I've gone there with kidney stones, and I've gone there. Probably contagious a few times, or I shouldn't have, but I don't mess around. If it was free dope on Wednesday nights at 5:45, I guarantee you I would be there. I don't know what you guys were doing when you were getting high, but, these guys told me, they said, "Hey, like, take this drive that you had for chasing drugs, this willingness that you had to, like, get the next one and apply it to your recovery process, and you'll be well on your way." And that's been my experience. So I got home and I went to this meeting and I felt at home, and I went back home, and the shitty committee started. You know, I got one of those, still talks to me, and it was a lot louder back then, and it's like 90 days, that's ludicrous, you know, the disease is talking to me. 90 days, that's outrageous. And you know, for the first time I asked myself, like, what's 90 days, and the whole, scheme of things, like 21 years of using versus 90 days on a scale, the scale's not even like quivering and you throw 90 days on it. It's doing nothing. It's just, you know, the weight of 90 days isn't doing anything. And so I said, you know, what do I got to lose? And so they also told me in that treatment center to go an hour early and stay an hour late for every meeting you go to in those first 90 days. And that's what I did. I went to well more than that. I think I did 128 meetings in my first 90 days clean. I was terrified I was going to use. That's like my experience. I was terrified that I was going to use again. It's ugly when I use. I'm not like having a couple beers at the bar and going home and I'm a terrorist when I use. I'm violent. I'll like park on your lawn and do burnouts and scream obscenities at your children. Like, I'm very, very mean when I'm using. And I enjoy being like that when I'm using. If you're laughing, you're probably doing the same shit. So now I'm terrified of you, thanks. So I got plugged into this thing right off the bat, man. There were some real strong guys in around here when I got here, and they told me to get plugged into this thing right away. They told me to get active in service right away. And that doesn't mean having a position at the area of the region level. It means like showing up early and making coffee and picking up cigarette butts. Because if we don't have a place to meet, then what? If we're not respecting the basement we're sitting in, where are we going to meet? Back on the streets. I don't want to be back on the streets. So like I respect the facilities that I go to. I haven't smoked in a long time, but I'll still pick up nasty ass cigarette butts. Because it keeps me clean. I would have did it for dope. I smoke nasty cigarette butts for dope. Those 90 days were like pivotal in this process for me, because I learned the whole program is right here. Narcotics Anonymous. The whole thing. So, like, you know, after the prayer, like, we tell you at every meeting what the meeting is, what Narcotics Anonymous is. It's not a secret. I'm guilty of it, you know. I'll be over there chatting away while they're telling me what the program is. You see me finger banging my phone once the prayer has happened. I try to stay like old school like that and try to text and drive a car, see how long you have your car. It's the same principle. They taught me some things like, stay in your seat. Don't leave 5 minutes for the miracle. Like I will sit in a meeting and have to pee. Like, you have no idea. And I will sit and I won't get up. Cause like, God has a sense of humor. He'll wait till I get up to go pee. And then what I've been struggling with for months, somebody will share about it and I'll miss it. God regularly laughs at me, I promise you. I promise you, he's up there giggling his ass off. Cause I will line up and do some stupid shit clean. When they told me all I had to do was have 90 days to observe H&I, guess what? On my 90th day in recovery, I was observing. When I had 6 months, I went in and they let me share something like for 5 minutes at an H&I meeting. Like, I wanted to be plugged into this thing. I was plugged into using, alright? I don't know. Hi. I don't know what anybody else was doing, but when I used, like, I was all in. I'm an all-in kind of guy. My friend Brother Phil Hawley says, I want all these precious, priceless gifts that Narcotics Anonymous has to offer. I want them all too. So I'm all in. I have a basic text that I carried around for 2 years, man. I carry that thing around with me everywhere. It looks beat up. It's dog-eared and dog-chewed on. Highlighted, it's got 100 coffee stains, underlined. It looks like it's been through war, because the first 2 years of my recovery were pretty scary. because I was terrified to use, and I didn't want to be disconnected from this. In the beginning, I would do a meeting at noon and then a meeting at 7, because I was afraid to be alone. Terrified of being alone. Because the committee was super, super loud back then. And I had no tools to like quiet the committee down. The committee's still there. They just, you know, they're a lot more quiet today, and I know how to tell them. I tell them to sit down and have a seat and just watch, you know. I'm still terrified to use. I don't have any misconceptions about what happens when I take the first one. It says in this book, I have the greatest possible advantage over my disease when I don't take the first one. That's been my experience. I'm like 5,100 some odd days, like that's been my experience. Today, like I had the greatest possible advantage over this thing that's trying to kill me because I didn't take something. No matter what I'm going to face today, I want the greatest possible advantage over what's trying to kill me. When I was using, I wanted the greatest possible advantage to get some free shit. I had that here. All the free spiritual growth I want. I just got to suit up and show up. And honestly, like this is the only thing that like when I got here that I ever like really committed to. I told myself I'm going to stop lying to myself. Well, I still lie to myself often. But the difference is I believe my own bullshit a little bit less every day that goes by. I could tell a lie so often and so frequently that over a period of time I would like believe that lie. And I don't want to be trapped in that vicious cycle today. I want to be free from that that self-made prison. And the only way out of that is through step work. They told me if you don't have a sponsor and you're sponsoring yourself, you have a fool for a sponsor. I don't want a fool to sponsor me. You know, that's where all them guys on the street, those were all fools. They were sponsoring me. I don't know if you weren't taking direction from your dope man, but I was. You know, I just didn't magically learn how to like clean marijuana to roll a joint. Somebody taught me that shit, and I was paying attention. And I got good at it.
That's right.
And recovery is the same way. Like if I like I have to allow somebody to teach me their experience. I don't have to like it. I never really liked smoking pot, but I probably smoked 2 truckloads of that shit in my lifetime. I only liked the reaction that I got from the people around me. That's mind-boggling. It's just, it blows my mind. One human being would smoke that much marijuana for some self-acceptance. And so, like, I got honest about step work. I will find that I will be dishonest in every area of my life. At one point or another. Because I'm imperfect. I'm never going to be perfectly honest everywhere I go. So when I sit down and do step work, I just say a little prayer. I ask God to allow me to be as honest as I can during this process. Because I don't want to believe in my own bullshit anymore. And the only way through that is honesty. And I got to get open-minded and I got to get willing. And it says in our literature, with those 3 spiritual principles, we're well on our way. I want to be well on my way. When I was using, I want to be well on my way to the dope, man. Get some free shit. And so, like, I get real, man, when I sit down with my step work and I get a pen out, like, I'll cry and snot, shake, and throw shit, cuss out loud, and, cause I'd rather get it out than get it in, you know what I mean? And I love putting pen to paper. I'll write till my hand cramps up. And I'm like, oh, this is good! I was just sharing with my sponsor on the way up, man. I was like, there's a big fear of the 4-step, and it's, I don't know why. I never had any bad experience with the 4-step, but there's a lot of negativity surrounding like the 6-step. And it was the first time around for me was really painful not sharing this with my sponsor. I mean, it drug me through the ringer doing a 6-step the first time. And this time around, I told myself, like, like I'm going to enjoy this experience because I should be able to get joy from my growth experience around here. And I don't have to take your experience of pain or my previous experience. It doesn't have to be that again. So I like took this time to like make it a joyful experience. And I love doing this sixth step. And it tells me in there, like, I'm powerless over removing my own defects of character. But it's my job to identify what that stuff is and get real about what it is. And that's what I did, man. I took the time and I didn't rush it. And man, what a cool experience, man. I just finished it up a couple days ago. And I didn't even have no attention on getting all the way through it. I just sat down and said, I'm going to do a little bit more. And I just started rolling. And man, what a cool experience. What a cool experience, man. The ninth step, who knows? That's where the rubber meets the road around here anyways, like when you gotta make an amends. That's where the big boys come out and you know, that's where your recovery really starts to shine forth. So I want my ninth step to be a lot similar to what this experience was for me in the sixth step. A joyful experience. I don't know, like this is a 12-step program. If you're not working steps with a sponsor, you're hanging out in a really strange place. I was hanging out at the crack dealer's house, not smoking his pipe. I never did that. So, like, if you're here, like, you have a sponsor, like, seriously, ask somebody how you find a sponsor. They'll give you direction. If they don't know, ask the next guy. They'll give you some direction on how to find a sponsor and get that sponsor and start taking direction. And that's what happens around here. We work steps and our life transforms. I'm completely different. I don't physically look the same. Most of the time, I don't act the same. I surely don't sound the same. Like, I'm educated. Like, through the blessing of recovery, like, I was able to, like, apply what I learned in the process of step work to actually going to school. I didn't miss any classes. I genuinely wanted to, like, go to class. What a revelation. I enjoyed it, man. During my education process, I couldn't like see myself not going to class. It'd be like the same thing, like choosing not to go to my home group. It's just not in my DNA to do that. Like I genuinely like wanted to go and learn and absorb. And you'll find it like the older you get in life, the harder it is to retain information. And it, you know, getting an education when you have gray hair is a lot more difficult than it is when you don't have gray hair. Especially when you abuse as much LSD as I have. It's very hard to retain information. Like, I understand, but keeping it in there, it's like pouring water in a sieve, man, it just goes all right back out. But like, I persevered and I kept suiting up and showing up and suiting up and showing up. And I took 3 4-year bachelor's degrees in 3.5 years. I also did 3 international study abroads and took a minor in a foreign language in 3.5 years. With a 5th grade education. That's what like step work can do for an addict like me. And I could share 100 other experiences with you like that. And you know, cause I've been clean a while, you know, 14 years, I get to experience a lot of what life has to offer in 14 years of recovery. I don't just sit around in church basements, man. That's not what we do around here. We take what we learn in this basement and apply in steps and we take it out in the world. I might be the only version of the basic text that somebody ever gets to see. And so like, what version of that, what version of this miracle am I being out on the street today? I don't want to hide it in the basement, man. I take it everywhere with me. I'm not standing up on a rooftop saying, oh, I'm recovering out of the flag like I did my first year clean. When I see that I can apply a spiritual principle, I do my best to do that. I don't know. I just can't imagine living my life any other way. I feel like I was destined to find my way into recovery. I'm very dedicated to this thing. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I love these old school guys that don't sugarcoat this shit for me. I love them guys, man. Early on in recovery, those guys used to piss me off. My sponsor used to irritate me so bad when I first got clean. I was like, oh, that guy's a dick. And now I love him because like he has this experience. Like, if I want that experience, I have to watch what he does and then apply it into my life. It doesn't say anywhere in here that I have to like it. It doesn't say that in here. It just says I have to apply it. and practice it. And so like that, you know, that's what I really like try to do today. I don't want somebody's children seeing me high. Right? I remember the first time I saw my mother rested. You know, really rested. I moved out here in 2003 and all my family's back out west. And I would go back regularly to see my mom. And after I had a couple years clean, she looked ill to me. And I said, "What's wrong with you?" She said, "Nothing's wrong with me. I've been sleeping good." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She says, "I know you're safe now." And you want to cry again? I don't ever want to like see that look on my mother's face again, you know. A lot of us come around here and we're like, "Oh, I never stole anything." Shit, I stole a lot from my mother, not out of her purse, but I was stealing her peace of mind. And she's not the only one. I was a thief in many ways. And I don't want to be that person today. It's a beautiful thing, man. I had this like this negative impact on everybody who came in contact with me. Whether I was like maliciously intent or not, if you were anywhere near me, you were suffering some sort of consequence when I was using. Because I'm a savage when I use. I'm all in. I'm all in. And so the same is true for recovery. If you're around me and you spend any time with me, that same effect is going to happen. If you're not serious about recovery, you will not want to be around me for very long. And that works out just fine for me. Seriously. You're not serious? You're not going to like being around me much because my life is recovery. My job doesn't come in front of this. None of my relationships. Nothing comes in front of my, in front of like the seriousness of what happens when I take the first one. And some guys don't like that, and girls, whatever, like, and that's fine. Don't like get this thing misconstrued about like my seriousness without like enjoying life. Like, I love to have fun, man. I love it. We camp and boat and ride motorcycles and jump out of planes and act like idiots. And there's one of my biggest stumbling blocks when I was using is I didn't think that if you didn't use, you couldn't have a good time. And I don't know what's happening for anybody else when they were using, but the last 10 or 12 or 13 or 14 years of using was not having any fun. It was a lot of work and it sucked. And it wasn't fun. My disease will tell me what it was telling this guy, "Oh, that's a good idea. It'll be different. It'll be the same experience I had the last time that I put a drug in me. It'll take me right to desperation. It doesn't matter what it is. It'll take me right back. Because it's not just that thing. I don't stop at that thing. I never stopped at one. Look at my driveway. I have like 8 vehicles. Seriously, like I don't have one of anything. I remember right around I had 4 or 4.5 months clean, and the disease was on me early on in recovery. Like I was obsessed to use. I mean, my every waking moment where I wasn't like plugged in reading literature or at a meeting or doing something, like the disease was on me and all over me and obsessed to use every waking moment. And in spite of that, I kept reading literature. I kept going to meetings. I kept talking about wanting to use. And I was already doing step work and getting honest about like my experience with using. And I remember, man, I cried at everything when I first got clean. I would watch Bugs Bunny and that shit would make me cry. Because I had been storing up all of this stuff inside of me and wouldn't let go of any of it. Because I didn't want any of you to know that like I'm vulnerable. And I had this fear that you wouldn't like me because I spent my whole life trying to make you think I was something that I wasn't. And I remember, man, I was just tired of crying and tired. My nose was all red from wiping my nose. And I just remember, man, getting down on my knees and praying and just asking God to relieve me from this shit. Because it wasn't like I wasn't doing anything. I was already plugged in. And I was already suiting up and showing up. And I fell asleep like that and I woke up and I haven't obsessed to you since that moment. That was a long time ago. And it's very infrequently that I feel like I want to use. The disease will tell me it's a good idea to have a beer or chase a hooker down and have 6 beers. Because that's the reality, right? It's not telling me to have 1. So it's like very rare that like the infrequently that the disease will tell that to me. But I had no desire to like be removed of this gift. The gift that we have as human beings is the ability to like rationalize and speech. And when I use, like those things are taken away from me. I no longer communicate properly and I stop taking care of myself. And I'm instantly removed from the human experience. And I don't want, the disease stole over 2/3 of my life when I got clean. I got clean, I was 31, I started using around 9 years old. So 2/3 of my life, the disease has stole from me. I never went to a high school prom. I never did all this stuff that we do as growing up. The disease stole that from me. And I just made a decision I have a decision on how much I want to allow the disease to take from me today. Because the disease can still take from me today without putting a drug in me. But I have a decision how much I'm going to let it take from me. And so I like to stay plugged in. That's why I do all this stuff, man. I go crazy, man. I'm all psyched up for summer, man. I'm like geeked out. Like I'm out doing physical shit I shouldn't be doing because I'm all pumped up for summer because summer in Narcotics Anonymous is a good time, man. If you're not having a good time in Narcotics Anonymous in summer, get some new fucking friends. Right? Seriously, I'm gonna have a real good time this summer. It's gonna hurt because my body's a wreck, but I'm gonna be smiling and I'm gonna be fat. I don't know. This is the greatest show on earth, man. There's so much stuff to do in Narcotics Anonymous. One of the things that breaks my heart around here is we have all this stuff that's not being done in Narcotics Anonymous. Just get plugged in somewhere, do something. It starts at the home group level, picking up cigarette butts and making sure that you have a place to come back to next week. And then it just blossoms from there, man. There's all kinds of retreat committees that need help. HNI needs help. Public relations need help. That stuff just tears away at my spirit. In the spirit of rotation, the guys that have been around here for a long time, we're going camping. And you guys can go do that service work. Right? Seriously, don't discount your own personal experience. You want to learn about traditions? Go to area service. Regularly. It says it right in here. The fastest way we learn is through experience. It's not through reading it. It's through service work. The fastest way to learn about practicing traditions is getting a service position. And the most difficult way is going to area of service. That's my experience. If you had a different experience, share it when you get up and share. But I learned a lot about how to love you, which is what our traditions teach us to do, is teach me how to love you through service work. And there's a lot of service work that needs to be done in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if you haven't seen what's happening in your community. It's a dangerous time to be a using drug addict. Very dangerous. The mortality rate is kind of scary. And it says in our literature that no addict need die from the use of drugs. Take what you learn out here. Give back to the fellowship that's saving your life. Don't take nothing. And maybe I'll see you camping.